Welcome to the CWF Gamecast. I'm Tom Barbalay, and today I'm joined by the one and only Jonathan Reinhardt. Hello, Jonathan.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. I understand we have a time limit associated with the show, so I'm going to talk faster than usual. But in this week's show, we are both going to cover, I guess, what is our 2 weeks in gaming.
Yep.
We have a review of Goblins in the Street. You do a review of Total Con. We introduce Bill Detmers, is that his pronunciation of his name? Bill.
That's correct.
Okay, I wrote it as it sounded. Wonderful. I have written down Constant.
Maybe Contest for podcast contest.
So a little bit of inside the podcast here. Jonathan reads out to me what he's going to do and I write it down. But unfortunately, sometimes my hands and my mind and my ears don't quite connect. So Contest was what was supposed to be there. Jonathan has some Xbox 360 discussion. I have a review of Robotech and some Osprey books. And then we get to talk about a listener email. And yeah, I guess we'll conclude the show relatively quickly this evening, Jonathan. Let's get into the week in gaming. What in the past couple of weeks have you been doing in your gaming life?
You know, not a whole lot, actually. I've been doing a lot of reading. I actually spent quite a bit of time reading over the Goblins in the Streets side quests, which I'm going to, you know, talk about when I do like my first glance on that. Otherwise, not really much. We've been getting slammed with snow here, so getting out and about's been kind of difficult. We just got a huge snowstorm today, and we're supposed to get another one on Friday, so this will be our fourth or fifth in like 2 weeks. But other than that, the death of the family, which is why we didn't do an episode last time. So I didn't get to do much in between. Been a quiet frontier, you know, a little bit of gaming, the Xbox, but otherwise not a whole lot. How about yourself?
Well, I've been doing various bits and pieces. I think I promised last show that I would give a book review of a few of the Osprey books that I received, so I'll talk a little bit about that in a few minutes. But with the 1993 writing just about to come out, my anticipation is to get it out at the start of February. I've gone back to the rule set that I was writing associated with that, and that brought me into looking at some old Robotech, and in fact some new Robotech role-playing game stuff as well, which I'll talk about a little bit further on in the show. And, yeah, the thing that that interests me is this notion of skill sets and the ability to generate real terminology skill sets like computer programming or espionage or these kind of things. And it's very similar to the Warhammer Fantasy roleplay early skill system. I can't recall if it extended as heavily into the second and third editions, but it was certainly in the first. And I recall the Palladium books, Robotech in particular, but also the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game that I played in my youth, had this kind of skill set stuff as well. But I'll save that for the Robotech review. And through the past couple of weeks also, you passed the Goblins in the Street PDF to me. And I understand that you've done a full-blown review of it. I had a quick look through it, but you have been spending some quality time with it, so why don't we tell the listeners about Goblins in the Street?
Okay, well, Goblins in the Streets is the second D&D 4th Ed geared side quest by this. It's a new company, actually, here in Massachusetts, called Imperium Star Games. And it's owned by a guy who games at one of the same stores that I game at. His name's Adam McLaughlin. He started the company a while ago, actually, and he kind of got up and running with the first side quest, which was Halls of Stone, I think. But you get all of... He releases all of his product through drivethrurpg.com. And the first one he released for free, you know, kind of like to give you a taste and see what you like. And then Goblins in the Street, I actually mentioned in our last episode, and at the time I had mentioned that it was going to be going on sale for $1.99. Unfortunately, he had to raise the price on that to $2.50. It's still not a whole lot of money for an item, but he had to raise it because production costs, I guess, went up a little bit more than he had anticipated. But this is actually a good way to play some D&D with you and some friends if you just kind of want to do a little bit of like hack and slash with some story thrown in. Maybe you only have like one session to spend on an adventure. Or if you are new to being a DM and you're not really sure where to go, you could take these side quests and then kind of string them together and make your own story to link them all. So it lets you do a little bit of both. But in this one, your adventuring party ends up in this town, and it's kind of like... You know what it actually made me think of? Now that I think of it, I'm not sure if you've ever seen it, but the old Japanese samurai movie, Yojimbo?
No, I haven't.
It's for the listeners, I'm sure someone out there must have seen it. It's an Akira Kurosawa classic, but like Yojimbo, the adventurers in this go to this town, and it turns out it's kind of like all boarded up and it's shrouded and everything, and it's because there's a gang, and this it's a gang of goblins who end up coming up through the sewers and kind of taking over and running the town. And in Yojimbo, it's two warring factions of gamblers who pit each other against each other and cause all sorts of problems. But in Goblins in the Street, you as an adventurer, you kind of go and then you have to deal with, I don't actually want to give too much away, but there are, you know, citizens, townspeople who you become involved with and you try to help. And then that leads you on to finding where the goblins have their stronghold, and then you kind of find out why they are here in the town and what's caused it. And along the way, you get some good loot from it. There's Adam's created some wonderful, actually, special items for the game that you can use. And they seem to fit perfectly. You know, they're not overpowerful, they're not underpowered, but the in-character. What I really liked about this side quest was the story. I thought it had a really nice story to it. And I thought for the price, you get a quite nice product. It has great artwork, great maps, great sketches. It's a full-color PDF, so it's pretty cool. It's about half a dozen pages. My one complaint with it is I think it needed a little more time being edited. There's quite a few spelling errors. There are some issues where things should be capitalized that they're not.
Yeah, it's funny because looking at it, I mean, certainly it's a dozen pages. The quality is really there in terms of the presentation. But I'm always in two minds with regards to these kind of things, because I mean for even for $250 for the quality of stuff that you get there, a few typos, you know, here and there. But I mean, in the day and age of spell checking and grammar checking, though, it really would have just been probably a 5-minute effort for them to just do the run through before they did the eventual layout. But the artwork is really there. I think the setting is good, as you say. It's got a strong narrative. And I think for, I don't know, what's $250, like a coffee at Starbucks or something like that? I mean, I think really the, I don't know, I think it's pretty good for $250.
It's cheaper than buying a White Dwarf, and I mean, a White Dwarf, even with the changes they've done nowadays, that's basically a full-color Buy Me ad for Games Workshop products without a whole lot of substance in it. And I know you kind of feel the same way about the War Games Illustrated magazine, that it's just, it doesn't have as much meat as it used to. So and both of those are, you know, more than double this. And this you can adapt and do whatever you kind of want with and take as much as you want or as little and just kind of make it your own. But I agree with you. I think the main strengths here are the narrative and the artwork. And, I mean, I spent maybe half an hour and I spotted, you know, some areas where it could be improved with spelling and syntax and that kind of stuff. And I guess that's not my background, but just kind of something I had seen.
But I guess my background with regards to role-playing was certainly creating these kind of scenarios on the fly, and we have talked a little bit about the evolution or devolution of D&D in terms of the ability of folk to really create these kind of scenarios. I guess back in the day, I used to build these things with friends and we'd print them out. They were typically between 32 and 64 pages, and then we'd bind them up and sell them at the local game store for usually a couple of bucks. But they typically were more campaign-oriented and contained detailed backstory and had a lot more magical items. So I think maybe this is just the evolution of that kind of form. Do you look at like online downloadable modules and things that you can purchase? Is this something that you've explored previously, Jonathan?
I've looked at it a little bit on what DriveThruRPG has, but only insofar as items offered by Mongoose Publishing. Because back in the day, I used to be part of their demo team for the Starship Troopers game. So at that point, it was right around the time DriveThruRPG was starting to come out. And I would look, they'd have like free downloads and stuff, and I would download some. I'm not a dungeon master, so I've never run anything. And I don't know how Goblins in the Streets run. Because as I've said before, I'm in a game run by someone else, and he creates his own worlds, and he does all sorts of stuff. It's fantastic. So he wouldn't do something like this just because he prefers to do his own thing instead of something that's pre-made. But if you need something in a cinch or you don't know where to start or you don't know what to do, a product like this could be really useful to you. It's easy, color. I mean, it has all the things that you need. And I think it would be easy for you, and I'm not sure what the legalities would be involved with this, but easy for you to reproduce portions of it to use in your game. Like, you know, to photocopy, say, a map that you need and just show the players a certain section of that map that they might need or yeah. something like that. I'm not talking about, you know, reproducing the entire item, which obviously would not be
certainly,
allowed.
Certainly. But it's an interesting point. I mean, you've just spoken exactly to my point that certainly my history developing these kind of games was exactly as you described with your DM friend that... you know, and in that level, I mean, certainly the maps that I used to produce for the stuff that I would sell in small module form were considerably more detailed than the maps that are available in Goblins in the Street, although it is a kind of a more narrative heavy as opposed to actual maps. But no, I think it's an interesting form and one certainly that I guess we'll continue to track in this podcast. And it'd be interesting actually for folks listening in as our listener base increases, if they have favorite online modules or these kind of things, if there's good examples of downloadable or share, I don't even know what you'd call this kind of content, like small amounts of money for PDFs. If you know of such places, such examples, please do let us know and we'll review them as we have done here with Goblins in the Street.
One thing I do want to say for the listeners is the owner of Imperium Star Games, which you can find online at ImperiumStarGames.com, has one confirmed that he's willing to be a guest for us sometime in 2011. We just need
Terrific.
To schedule that. And one thing I definitely want to talk to him about when he gets to be on the show is, you know, of course, how he started creating the company and doing all this. But I'm curious how many downloads he gets of both his first side quest, which was a free download, and of this new one, Goblins in the Streets, to kind of see if he notices a trend or where it might be going. Like that, obviously he's a smaller publisher, but still the numbers, although scaled down, would be indicative of something for him, which I think would be interesting. And then the second thing is, on his website, he kind of has like this informal blog kind of thing he calls Imp's Corner. He goes by the online moniker of Imp. Why, I'm not really sure. But in it, he mentioned us how in our last podcast episode, episode 45, we kind of did a little bit of a preview of it. So he referenced us and thanked us for, you know, putting the word out there and everything. So it'll be nice to maybe see what sort of reciprocal relationship we can work out with them on this down the line, just from, you know, talking about the products. And, you know,
certainly.
We're not going to pull any punches. If we like something, we will say it. And if we don't, we'll say that too. I mean,
yeah, I think we've given a fair review this evening. I mean, certainly, I think we've given a mixed review and perhaps things that he can work towards in the future. But Bill Detmers, who's Bill Detmers?
Bill Detmers is going to be interviewed by us at the end of the month, and I know your brother's coming out, so I'm not quite sure how that's going to play. But he's
it might be a solo interview or just an interview with you and Bill talking about looks of things.
It could very well be that. And of course, Tom, you know, if you have anything you'd like brought up, feel free to send him, you know, bring it up
certainly.
With him. But we will record that. I think he's free on the 29th, so we're going to record that, which will give me not very much time to get it out for the following week. But he's CEO of 127games.com, which is a company that sponsors the podcast and the blog. I've wanted to get him on to chat with us for a while. I thought it'd be interesting to see how we came to it, because this is a secondary business for him. He'll do his primary business, and then he comes home and he'll do this and stay up until like 2 or 3 in the morning, filling orders and packaging. And I think it's an interesting story how he kind of came into it and why he does it and how it's kind of grown out from where he started and to see where he's going to go with it. But I just thought it would be fun to talk to him about that. But of course, in addition to this, he's actually really into War at Sea. So he's a big gamer for that. And that's actually why he couldn't record with us earlier this month. He had some family obligations, but then one of them is he has a standing monthly game of War at Sea with a bunch of people, which is, I guess, something everyone kind of looks forward to. He kind of does it up pretty big. So it'll be fun to talk to him about the rules for that and the game and new expansions that'll be coming out for it.
Very good. I'd like to talk a little bit about the Robotech role-playing game, if we have a moment, Jonathan, because this is something that I played in my misspent youth in Australia, and then recently, I discovered, I think probably in a local Borders, that they had republished the Robotech rules under the Shadow Chronicles role-playing game in a much smaller format, actually. It's now in a kind of manga book-style format, a kind of anime book-style format. And they'd revised some of the rules, but basically it's exactly the same rule set. As I noted, the reason that I was looking for it specifically was because the skills, the way the skills traverse and the diversity of skills actually replicates a lot of the stuff that interests me in artificial life currently, particularly with social graphs. And I think also this could fit into Noble Warfare as well, a little bit more on that later in the show. But anyway, I went through the Robotech rules and it was very familiar to me. I actually bought on eBay probably 2 years ago some of the older Robotech books that I'd given away. But the funny thing was I was sitting up in bed last night thinking about the Robotech rules and I'd completely forgotten that I'd actually bought this Shadow Chronicles game. I went downstairs to the library, pulled it from the shelf, and I realized that it wasn't just something that I'd observed. I'd actually purchased a copy. I found this recently, actually. I mentioned last show, the Viet Cong book that I purchased two of. I also purchased two of the most recent Skaven Codex for Warhammer. So I think these are two prizes that could be offered in relatively near proximity. You must wonder how one can actually buy multiple copies of the same book accidentally, and this seems to be a kind of repeating habit for me. My mind, I guess, for these things just isn't particularly good, but it was wonderful to thumb through the Robotech rule set again because it's the whole Palladium book series. I'm not sure if you've encountered it, Jonathan. If you're relatively new to role-playing, you probably haven't. But they have a system that they've kind of stretched out in a variety of different directions. They have a fantasy game. They have a game called Heroes Unlimited. They weren't listing the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game on their website. They certainly listed the Robotech game. But I really don't know that much about Robotech. I mean, I had the books. I don't even recall if I played a game because it was a bit beyond my role-playing friends in Australia. But I certainly like the old cartoon series, and in doing this, I put it into iTunes to see if there were any Robotech podcasts, and I found possibly one of the most curious podcasts ever, a kind of combination of Howard Stern and fanboy hate. I'm not sure, Jonathan, if you've had a chance to listen to Robotech Fan.
I tried to download it on my iPad, but for some reason iTunes kept quitting on me, so I took that to be karma. That maybe I should not spend any time on the Robotech Fan podcast.
So I discovered it yesterday evening as I was actually reading the Robotech role-playing game rule set again. And I must confess I've listened to about 5 hours of it since. It really is just it's like postmodern podcasting, and really it's a deconstruction of when fandom goes bad. It really is quite unlike anything. And the surreal thing about it is that out of listening to 5 hours worth of it and then doing some various Google searches, I then came to realize why I've never been able to find Robotech in any of the kind of Japanese anime areas. And that is because Robotech is not genuine Japanese anime. It's in fact a hybridization of three separate anime features that then a fellow in LA whose name is... Oh, my mind's gone blank, but he recently passed away. Having just watched these things cobbled together without any sound, wrote a story to. So Robotech, in and of itself, is actually a kind of strange American concoction of three different anime series that are pasted together, Macross being the most famous Japanese anime that it came from. But I never realized that. I was kind of curious, a reawakening, but... I don't know, I must have probably been about 8 or 10 when Robotech first came out in Australia, at least. And I remember it was played at like 6 a.m. in the morning on a Saturday morning, and I used to have to get up early in order to watch it. And I must have watched it for about 3 years. The narrative is very strong, but it is really quite curious that what he did was cobble together three separate anime series, and just by overdubbing voices with what he believed the narrative should be like, he actually created this thing in and of itself. But that's my little review of Robotech. And if we have time, if I could just talk about these Osprey books as well.
Oh,
I talked a little bit about my interest in the Vietnam War. And out of the Vietnam War books that I've purchased, and I really shouldn't say this since we're giving away the Viet Cong as a prize coming up, but the two books that I think were really, you know, if you have a limited budget and you're looking for two Osprey books on the Vietnam War, Armies of the Vietnam War, 1962 to 1975, and then Armies of the Vietnam War II, these are two books which are just phenomenally good. And there is a kind of mixed account. I have a similar feeling associated with the kind of Cuban-American Osprey books, that they do have a slightly, I don't necessarily want to say pro-America, but certainly an anti whoever the US, in this case the Australians, were fighting against. And their narrative is every photograph that is taken by the Viet Cong through these books says Viet Cong propaganda photo. And it kind of strikes me that a lot of these Osprey books, the language associated with how they describe the other side, this was also, I don't own, they have a Mujahideen one, and I was hesitant to actually purchase that because I've heard that basically it doesn't offer any reasonable account. And the Cuban-American stuff in Osprey, I think, is very poor for that reason. But aside from that, I think the armies of the Vietnam War, both one and two, are probably the only two books on Vietnam that you really need if you're interested in doing wargaming associated with it. I think there's more detail in the other books that I purchased associated with Vietnam, but those two are by far the top ones. And the Algerian War I just found absolutely fascinating. I've read it cover to cover twice. And it really represents, and folks who listen to Stone Ape have already heard this, but it really represents the first modern Mujahideen conflict and describes in quite great detail the strange mix of nationalism, obviously religious fundamentalism, and also real elements of kind of naivety, sometimes associated with kind of communist or socialist doctrines, but oftentimes just a complete mishmash of these things to go up against, in this case, a colonial empire. And so I thought the Algerian War, 1954 to 1962, was also a standout book. But I understand, have you been to TotalCon,
Jonathan? I haven't. This will be my first time going at the end of February when it comes around.
And what are you anticipating there?
I don't know what I'm anticipating, actually. I've heard a bunch of different stories from people who've gone before, so I'm not sure which way it's going to end up going. Some people have said they do a lot of board gaming. Other people have said that it's very predominantly like 40K or becoming 40K. So I'm not sure if it's going to be a mixed match or what the output ends up being and how many people show up or any of the logistics or anything. I'm just kind of trying to go with an open mind and find my way through the darkness to see what I come across.
Interesting. So it's a combination. So it's a vendor and games convention.
Yes, it's the largest New England gaming convention, and this year will be the 25th year that they've run it. I think they've always run it at the Holiday Inn in Mansfield, but uh-huh. I wouldn't bet money on it. I know that's where it's been the past few years and where it will be this year. But they just had the pre-registration put up so that you could do mail-in registration as of maybe a week ago, and then pre-reg just went live tonight on their website. Unfortunately, I tried to pre-register on the website, and I kept on getting fatal errors. So I'm not sure if I broke it, someone else broke it, or it hates me, or what it is. But there are a couple events that I'd like to go to. And in addition to that, when you try to register, and if you're successful, and I hope you are, you can try to get like different types of tickets, tickets that get you into certain events, and what they call generic tickets that you can then put into any event. And you can also get, like, a T-shirt, which I think adds, like, $15 to your cost or whatever. But all the tickets end up costing money on top of the sum that you pay in order to go. But there was, actually, I have here, let's see. There were a couple events that I want to, panels, actually, that I want to go to. There's one on Friday night at 7 o'clock. I guess it actually starts at 8, but they kind of want you there for 7. Called Game Designers Panel, and they're going to have some people talking about like what it takes to create and design a tabletop RPG. And there's going to be like an open forum kind of at the end where they let you ask some questions. And then another one is on Saturday afternoon I want to go to called Gaming in the Media, and they're going to talk about you know, what do you do once you have a game and the relationship between the game industry and print media and like TV and web designs and PDFs, kind of like what was done with Goblins in the Street and podcasts and all that kind of stuff. So I figured that would kind of be handy to see how they view dealing with the media, since I guess in a sense we're on the other side of that. But then on top of that, I want to go to this couple of Flames of War events being run by Adler Hobby. I want to go see, and then while I was going through the pre-reg stuff, I came across an event listing For a D&D event run by Battleground Games and Hobbies, the store owner, Derek Lloyd, is actually going to run a dungeon delve on Saturday starting at 10 in the morning, I think. So I thought I'd pop by and see what's going on over there and say hi and everything. Probably won't play in that, though. I just kind of wanted to go to the, you know, panels and then look around and talk to people and, you know, maybe do some purchasing depending on what they have going on for sales at the exhibit hall and everything. But just kind of soak it up and see what's happening. Right now I'm trying to get some of my friends to go, and I'm not sure how successful I'm being, but it would be nice to have some more people go so I can bounce ideas off them. In addition to this, I won an auction on eBay for us for a Zoom H2 recorder, which was recommended by a journal I read from for work as a good podcasting equipment for libraries. So I figured if it's being recommended by the ALA for libraries to get, it might be useful for us. The price was right, and if it arrives in time, there'll be a whole setup that I can use to maybe get some audio for us, which would be quite handy, actually.
So I understand you've been playing some Xbox 360 recently. What games in particular, and what have you found?
Well, a while ago, I put out the call to people to get some recommendations for games, in addition to telling people that if they want to befriend me on Xbox Live, that I would welcome their friendship and would welcome them kicking my butt to teach me how to play some of these games. So I heard back from a couple people, actually. One person recommended that I get the game Fallout. I also got recommendations for Red Dead Redemption, Batman Arkham Asylum, and then Steven from the WWPD News from the Front podcast suggested a game called Toy Soldiers, which is a digital download. And I actually downloaded that today, and I was playing that actually before we started recording. It's kind of makes me think of easy, simplified version of Flames of War with toy soldiers set in World War One.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of fun. It's a real-time strategy kind of game where you have these toy soldiers and you have to put weapon emplacements to protect your half of, like, the toy battle board. And so you put these different things in, and as you kill off your opponent's forces who come in waves of enemy forces, and they get progressively harder, you earn money, which you then use to put more, like, defenses and obstacles and weapons. You have, like, mortars and planes and all sorts of stuff. So I got to play it for maybe about an hour, and it's actually quite fun. Steven recommended not playing the multiplayer. I think he said there were some problems with lagging and, you know, getting someone else to play against. But the single play was quite good. And, you know, it's easy. It's a fun kind of thing. It's not something I would take too seriously. But that was, it was interesting enough to play. I think it's worth whatever money it is to get it. It's about like $15 or something like that. But good graphics, fun music, kind of made you feel like you were in World War One, and it's a little goofy, but it was interesting and, you know, something to do maybe on like a Saturday afternoon when you don't have anything else better planned. But I enjoyed it, and I so far anyway, I would recommend it to other people to consider. Of course, I'm still looking forward to people sending me requests. You can do so at CWF Gamecast, which is my gamer tag, and I'm not on it a whole lot, but if you want to send a friend request, and you can send me a message, and we can set up a time for you to kick my butt and teach me how to play Halo or why I'm just not doing something as good as I should be. But I like playing it, and actually it was kind of funny. My wife, and let me know if I had mentioned this before, but she, as the listeners and everyone might know, is kind of into zombie kind of things. So she wanted to get the game Left 4 Dead, which we had picked up and I had played for a while. But when she started to play it, she realized that maybe the controls for it weren't something that she could get used to, so she gave up playing the game. And I was telling this to a friend of mine, Kurt, who actually just became a father for the first time yesterday. He was telling me that his wife, same situation, wanted the game because she liked zombies and thought it would be fun, picked it up, decided to play, found the controls, just wouldn't work for her, and then discovered that you could watch Netflix on the Xbox, and she uses it that way ever since, and my wife has started to do the same. So mm-hmm. I thought it was kind of interesting that, you know, the similarity between the two of them, that, you know, they both kind of wanted to play a game and then just didn't like how the controls worked and decided they would use it as a multimedia device instead.
Well, speaking of Stephen McLaughlin, he also sent me an email this week asking about macOS 10 turn-based strategy games, if I knew of any. And I have real frustrations in this regard, obviously, as Stephen has. In fact, this was one of the many motivating factors for me to start writing Noble Warfare, was basically just the lack of games that I wanted to see on the Mac in particular, but also for other platforms as well. We talked a little bit about last time about Close Combat and the Close Combat series of games, and unfortunately, there just doesn't seem to be anything like that currently available for Mac OS X. There was a game from... I'm trying to think now. It had a monkey in the title. But anyway, there was a similar game to the Total War series that was produced by... I'm really kicking myself here because they featured very heavily in the Best Damn Podcast Ever. But anyway, they had a game called, I think, Ars Legionnaire, that was a kind of top-down strategy game for the Mac. And that was actually pretty good. I think I paid $19 for it. And let me just see if I can find it online so people who are interested. Ars Legionnaire and Monkey. What was the name of the software company? I can't find it here, Jonathan. Why don't we cover the next topic, which is the contest, and I'll furiously do searches for it as well.
Okay, well, on the issue of games for the Mac, that was a major concern of mine when I first got my Mac, and one reason why I almost didn't get one, but the fact that you could then boot into XP or some other OS that would have more games available for it was my saving grace. Ironically okay. enough, I don't end up booting into XP to play anything. If it's not on the Mac, I'm not going to play it. So thankfully, World of Warcraft, although not a real-time strategy game, is a game that'll work on both ends, which is nice. Yeah.
So I found the company instantly. It's Burning Monkey Software, and it's called Legion Arena rather than Ars Legionnaire. I think Ars Legionnaire is another game.
Yes.
That, I thought, was actually quite good. My only frustration... with it. I'm just trying to actually, my internet's going rather slow just to confirm that that is actually the program that I used. But my only frustration with it was that it was very, I don't particularly like ordered games where you start off with very simple circumstances and then you move towards more complicated circumstances. And I think my frustration, sorry, Freeverse is the name of the company. Okay. Freeverse, Legion, the Burning Monkey was their solitaire game, which is why I think of their company. But the only frustration I had, like I said, was that you started off in a very simple environment and then progressively you were allowed to get more units and what have you. And from my perspective, when I came to any of these kind of games, I come with an already, like, I already have a sense of the skills that I need. I already know what archers do. I already know what heavy cavalry does. I basically don't like the circumstances where I start off with very simple conflicts and then work up. I'd much rather start with, you know, multiple legions kind of clashing together per total war. And that is the only frustration that I had with Legion Arena, if that was actually the game's name. My internet connections died on me. But that, I think, is the only Mac OS X game that I've played that really has given me... And that wasn't turn-based per Stephen's email. That was all real-time. My personal preference is always for real-time. I find turn-based just a bit too contrived. And I think ultimately, if you're interested in turn-based games, playing them outside a computer is probably a better environment. Whereas if you're interested in kind of being in the thick of things as the battle evolves, then really computer real-time strategy is the place to be. So unfortunately, Stephen, aside from Legion Arena from Freeverse, I haven't actually played anything else on Mac OS X. And I give it a... probably 6 out of 10 rating. It's very similar to Total War. The interface is slightly more clutchy, and I just became frustrated with the whole notion that I was actually progressing through the game designer's view of the way people should play the game versus starting up with... I mean, my interest in these kind of games is always seeing the breaking point associated with performance, and certainly that was the thing that I had the most fun with Total War, was actually finding... what configurations played best on the computer that I had and then kind of maxing out that configuration. And unfortunately, I didn't get the same experience with Legion Arena, just because I was constantly progressing. And I got to a relatively high level, and then I think the game crashed and I lost that and I went back to the start again, which really frustrated me because I'd been playing it by that point for probably about 12 days, not solidly, but in the evenings. And I didn't like the frustration of being, you know, starting back at the, you know, original point again. But that is probably the only game I can think of on the Mac that even comes close to some of the PC games that we've been discussing. And it really is a problem. I mean, I'm nominally a Mac developer, and that's what I certainly tried to do with Noble Warfare, was start to integrate these ideas into my own open source environment. But anyway, I think we've come to the point where we can talk about the contest, Jonathan.
Okay. Before we do, I just want to say I still have Legion Arena in front of me. And for a game that you're given 6 stars out of 10, it's kind of pricey at $39.95, so I'm not sure if I would take the plunge for that.
I think they might have raised the price since I... Because my recollection, I may have purchased it when it was on special as well. That may have been the way that I got onto it. So that's probably why I spent,
They do a discount if you buy that and something called Hordes of Orcs, which I guess is their version of maybe Warcraft.
Hordes of Orcs is really bad. I wouldn't recommend Hordes of Orcs at all. And Legion Arena was considerably better than that. Hordes of Orcs is just basically, it's a bit like three-dimensional Lemmings.
Oh.
The orcs kind of flood in. No, it's not in any way a strategy. Well, I mean, it's a it is a kind of strategy game, as Lemmings was a strategy game.
If you like the idea of both of these games, and I'm sure it appeals to someone who I don't know, but they give you a break. You save roughly $15 if you buy both. You get both basically 50 instead of 65, but it sounds like a lot of money to me for either game, actually.
Yeah, I think they've overpriced this. I think Freeverse, you know, knock it down to $19.95 for Legion Arena, and, you know, that's a steal. That's what I paid for it at $39.95. I'm going to have to knock a couple of points off. I think that's 4 out of 10 territory, as far as I'm concerned. So, sorry about that, Freeverse.
I'm not even sure if I'd pay $39.95 for Total War, and I like Total War a lot, but I don't know, not for $40.
Freeverse has always operated under the idea that Mac people are willing to pay a premium on owning a Mac, and I think that's just a really flawed model. Anyway, we've kind of jumped on this poor company. Let's continue on with the contest.
Okay, so the contest is the Name Our Podcast contest, and we've been running this for a while, and we've gotten some submissions, and I've actually sent Tom recently an email with a name that I've come up with.
I didn't like it. Jonathan. Okay, it didn't do anything to me. I was thinking, actually, what we need to have in the title is something associated with wargaming, and whatever we put aside from wargaming, really, I mean, I was even kind of floating Johnny and Tommy's Wargaming Podcast as a possibility. I had a few other ones that I was running with. I like the British and American tank stuff, but I think the contest is still open, and I'm actually warming to CWF Gamecast for the time being. I think we need a really, you know, we needed a knockout one. I mean, for my other podcast, Two Scrooges was a knockout title, and I think we need a knockout title for this one. So I think we're just going to have to keep the contest open until we get some submissions that are worthy of changing the podcast over.
I think that sounds good. I was just going to mention what some of the other submissions were. One person, a friend of mine actually, has been sending quite a few submissions. He seems to really enjoy using the motif of one of his submissions, which was No Badger, No Gnome. For those of you who are friends of us on Facebook, you may have seen it on there. It's a reference to D&D, and it's an inside joke kind of thing for my friends, which is why I like it, but at the same time, it wouldn't work for the podcast. It's too D&D-centric, and it's too much of an inside joke, so it doesn't have that universality that would appeal to a lot of people. But he's had a few for that. We had your suggestion for a Sherman and a Churchill, and then another friend had kind of a variation So we have some submissions coming in. It would be nice to have more. We'll have this going on for a while. But what we will be offering, in addition to the t-shirt with the new name of the podcast, which hopefully we will eventually get a new name. We'll see how that goes, though. We have that, but then we're also throwing in, what did I have? We're going to throw in a copy of Goblins in the Streets, not only for the person who submits a name, if we end up choosing it or if it ends up strongly influencing us, but we're going to toss out some giveaways of Goblins in the Streets to people who do submissions that we just like, that tickles our fancy, that are interesting or unique or whatever. So we're going to be giving some of those away, too. So use that as incentive to start tossing some names out there. And as we mentioned in our last podcast, you can email them to us at cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. You can go on Facebook, go on Twitter, or you could go on the blog, wargamingforums.com, and leave them as a comment to just about anything you see out there is fine. We have a thread up there on about the contest itself, which would probably be the best place. But, you know, any, you can leave it as a comment to this episode in the show notes or whatever you want to do. So those would be the best ways to get your submissions to us, and we'll be keeping an eye on them. And if something tickles our fancy and we think that's, you know, just it, we'll end up adapting it, or, you know, we'll be on the lookout for the right name. But as Thomas said, we don't seem to have that just yet. So we'll keep on plugging on.
Yeah, the interesting phenomenon with this is that we're actually growing a prize pool. I mean, I've got a Viet Cong book, I've got a Skaven book, you've got Goblins in the Street, we've got these other things. As the time goes on, probably the prize pool associated with naming the podcast will grow progressively to the point where it's actually a sizable prize, and people may, I guess there's also folks listening to the podcast, you know, we may get more interesting submissions, but I like the idea that this prize pool is steadily growing as I continue to accidentally purchase two copies of things. And you're going to throw in Bioshock CDs and various other things. So, yeah, I think this is an ongoing contest.
Yeah, and, you know, don't hold out too long to see how big the prize gets for the prize basket, the gift bag of swag. But, you know, if you have that stellar idea, toss it out there now. And, I mean, that way you claim the prize before someone beats you to it. But Tom, like you said, this thing's kind of growing, I don't want to say astronomically, but the prize support seems to be getting bigger and bigger every single time the issue comes up. So who knows where it'll go. I mean, there'll be a ceiling eventually. But it's just kind of interesting. It, I guess, kind of related to this, recently on the WWPD podcast, they ran our promo that you did, which is... I like listening to it just by itself, actually, quite often. I think it's kind of catchy. It's kind of fun. It's a little quirky. I like the different renditions you did. And yes. I'm going to say it's a direct result of that, although it may not be. But our subscribers have kind of increased recently.
Uh-huh.
I have Feedbird set up to keep track of our stats for the feed, which is kind of technical. Just a way to track the numbers of people who download episodes and who supposedly subscribe to the podcast, and we've gotten half a dozen more subscribers and maybe a dozen more downloads than we normally would have for episodes. It seems people like our rename our podcast episode, which was 44, and then Hello 2011 episode 45 was pretty big, and then people still trying to get that Welcome Cataclysm episode that we have. There's a few downloads for that, so I'm gonna chalk that up to WWPD and give thanks to Steven for that. But, you know, as we get more subscribers and more listeners, we would like you to get your input, too. Whether you've been listening to us all along or, you know, for 10 minutes now, send your thoughts out and get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you.
So anyway, Jonathan, it's been a pleasure as always. We still have a few recording times before my brother arrives. So it looks like actually probably we'll be recording into early February. And then I'm going to probably be available on Skype still, so we could still record via Skype. And it's going to be quite interesting as I go through my travels, if I'll be able to get some wargaming-related stuff. In my anticipation, my hope is that when we're in the Bay Area, I will be able to go to the Games Workshop in the Bay Area that I wasn't able to last time I was in the Bay Area. And aside from that, we're going to Berkeley, and there are some amazing gaming stores in Berkeley. So hopefully I'll be able to give an update from the road associated with those things, but look forward to talking to you about this time next week, Jonathan.
Yeah, it sounds very exciting. I look forward to hearing about all your adventures when your brother comes out.
Terrific. Talk to you soon, Jonathan. Okay. Take care.
You too.